The try to make me go to rehab. I probably should have listened to them.
Hard hitting truth.
That was gonna be my question. I was about to ask, and I was like, not gonna bother. Not gonna bother asking if how controversial
you should do that
in the intro.
I mean, look.
Well,
if you need help, you should seriously go get it.
Oh, we'll listen. We'll totally discuss. Yeah. But before we discuss, welcome in everybody to another episode of Totem Talks, season 6, episode 18.
That's right.
Time is flying through this season. And it is certainly, by the very basic definition, an episode that we have today.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that it upholds all the parameters that we've established for an episode up to this point.
Yes, I mean, we are comparing and contrasting two artists.
That's right.
And what an interesting comparison. Oh, yeah. About as different as you could be, I think. Yeah. Like, quite literally.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, if you are new to the world of Totem Talks, welcome in. We are a music-based podcast where we take two artists, we talk about their works, their histories, what we like, what we don't like, and then we decide who's better between the two. And then we're slowly working our way to determine the greatest musical act of all time. And maybe we found them today.
Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah, well, you're Nick. I'm Pat.
I am.
This is Totem Talks. And why don't you tell us who we're covering today?
Oh, Nick? I would love to. We are, and now I don't want to spoil anyone's full name or anything. So we are starting things off with an artist known here in the States as Björk, known in other places like Iceland, and probably only in Iceland is like Björk. And Björk is going up against Amy Winehouse.
That is correct. Thank you so much for not spoiling.
I didn't want to do the whole
Björk's full name.
Yeah. I know you're excited to do that.
Real, so. Yeah, yeah.
Nick, I don't want to steal your thunder.
Nick joined in on our podcast call today to me repeatedly playing a video of just the pronunciation of Björk's name because it's something.
It sure is.
So without any further ado, all right, I just got to dive in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Björk Gerbenstötter. Is an Icelandic singer, songwriter, composer, record producer, and actress. She's been active from 1975 until the present day. Born in 1965, so that is a 10-year-old beginning of her career.
Yeah.
We covered three albums. We started with the oft-skipped-over eponymous debut, Björk.
Yeah.
Which came out in 1977.
But you know we can never leave one of those out.
No, of course we cannot. We followed it up with the interestingly named second album, Debut, from Björk, which came out in 1993. And then we closed things out with Fossura from 2022.
Yeah, that's all correct.
Björk was my artist of the week, so I get to talk about Björk's first album, Björk. Huh. Well, this album is entirely in Icelandic. That's the first thing I will say. Second off, this album was not the worst thing I've ever heard.
Both of those things are true so far.
Here's what happened. Musically, really actually good. Good instrumentation. They did some good covers. Your Kiss Is So Sweet by Stevie Wonder. The Fool on the Hill by Lennon, you know, by the Beatles. They did really good stuff. Edgar Winter was credited as a writer on this one, which I'm assuming means it's an Edgar Winter cover. I can't tell you all the titles are Icelandic.
Yeah.
Listen, I looked up how to pronounce Björk's name and probably still got it wrong. Not going to attempt to ruin.
Oh, you don't. I was going to ask what your favorite song was, actually.
My favorite song was the cover of Your Kiss Is Sweet.
But what was it called, though?
Bukala.
Oh, okay.
Bukala.
Now, I feel like one thing that would really help me personally is if you could tell me which studio this was recorded at. Is that
sure. No problem. This was Hijariti Studios in Reykjavik, that is correct.
Yeah, Reykjavik's the easiest one. I was so disappointed. Do you have any idea how disappointed I was when I looked at where she was from and it was like
and it was
the
Reykjavik?
Capital of Iceland, the most famous city, the one that people actually know of, and not some small town that was like six words long.
I was fine with it. Here's what
I wanted it to be: that volcano that exploded like 8 years ago and stopped all air traffic,
right?
In around the UK, back and forth, and all that stuff. That's what I wanted it to be.
Okay, here's what I'll tell you: This is a professional group of musicians that are performing very well. The music is very good behind her, and she's an 11-year-old girl. And she sounds like an 11-year-old girl. I mean, granted, this isn't the first time we've had a child who's like very young sing, but unfortunately for Bjork, she's not like one of the greatest female singers of all time.
Right.
And, or Michael Jackson. Like, she's not one of the greatest
at that age already.
Yeah. Like adult Bjork is a good singer, which we'll discuss when we get to adult Bjork, but she's not like a generational vocal talent that was still sounding that good at 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. She sounds like a typical child who maybe should not be singing the level of song they're asking her to sing at this age.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally not her fault.
Sure. Oh, totally.
But it is a weird album to get through because of that.
Uh-huh.
Like, the weird juxtaposition of, like, this is just a child singing. Mm-hmm. It's like a weird kid
my
pop
first
I'm
note is
to.
Literally just a child singing.
Yeah. Like, this is, I don't understand. As far as I'm concerned, like, I understand why this is left off of her wiki.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Discography.
I mean, she definitely is like way more serious as an artist, and I think that like that just being like a little cool project a kid got to do one time.
Yeah, 100%, and that is cool, and it definitely was like a family thing. So like her father was involved in this album.
His name?
No. no. I refuse. I will not be baited.
Fair enough.
Although, like we had talked about in Iceland, they do the your last name is your parents' name, your father's name.
Yeah, right.
So his last name is in fact Gudmund Gunnarsson, whose I'm assuming father's name was Gunnar.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from there.
Indeed.
So, and then her mother designed the cover of the album. So, like, you know, it was a family project kind of thing, which is cute. And the music was good. And she's a child.
Yep.
And that's my review.
Yeah, I mean, I have very similar feelings. Like, it was so funny because this is only available on YouTube. I don't know if you had a different
experience. Yeah, no, I couldn't find
it anywhere
else.
Definitely on YouTube. And like all of the comments under this video that has like 800 plays are like, this is actually the best record ever recorded. Like, Bjork is the greatest artist of all time, but people discount the fact that even at 11, she was making the best music that anyone has ever made. In particular, at Jingle McFungus said, the most adorable and amazing album ever written and released. Like, those are real words that real people typed into YouTube when listening to this record. And I can't fully wrap my mind around that. I just don't understand.
I'm telling you right now, that is still less crazy than when a legitimate review I saw on AllMusic compared Rat to the Beatles and said Rat was bigger than the Beatles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get some interesting opinions in music.
Yeah. All right. So, again, you know, realistically, Bjork herself was the least interesting part of this record. And, you know,
that's fair.
Like, it's not her fault. She's just
no.
Like, I don't even know how to evaluate it.
Yeah. Like, I want to be very clear. She's a child. We're not making fun of her for this album. It's just that she's a child.
She didn't do anything bad or wrong.
No.
It's just like awkward and strange.
It's like if I heard any like typical kid who like maybe had like an okay singing voice for a kid.
Yeah. Like
record a full album of classic rock.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah, that's odd. What it sounded like. It was fine. Yep.
All right. So then we now are listening to adult Bjork, who is like fully cultivated an artistic identity.
Oh, yeah. This is post her multiple debut. Bands. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is strange because I finished this record and I have like no words to describe how I felt about it. Really? I mean, like there were lots of times on the record when it was like super dance poppy and electro poppy and definitely not for me. Definitely repetitive musically at times. But then there are other times when like just the melodies that she was writing were so creative and out of the box that it held my attention. And there are different parts in the music that I thought were really interesting. She embraces dissonance a lot in her compositions. I like at the end of the day, what I wrote was I found it equal parts interesting, bizarre, and unenjoyable to listen to. And that's how I feel about Bjork.
Okay. All right. So I guess you're leaving.
I'm leaving that up to you.
Cool. Bjork is weird.
Mm-hmm.
As an artist, I don't know what to make of Bjork, because she doesn't care about sounding good,
right?
Which is fine, but it also annoys me sometimes, because every once in a while she'll rip this like high belt note in like the song, mm-hmm. and I'm like, well, shit, Bjork can sing,
right?
Bjork has a good voice as an adult, and it's just not, she's not utilizing it, which is fine. Like, she's definitely one of those people who music is just her canvas.
Yeah.
And like, she is like a painter of music. We've run into artists like that a few times. That's totally fine as an art form. You know, there's definitely a difference between somebody who, you know, if we're talking about painters, there's a difference between somebody who paints like a kick-ass bowl of fruit and it looks amazing, mm-hmm. and everybody loves it, versus somebody who paints like, you know, splatter paint. And
yeah, looks... I was going to say, I mean, it's abstract. Like, the comparison
right.
to painting directly is like, if musicians could make abstract music, if you could put like a late yeah. Picasso piece,
which you could argue instead, avant-garde and like art yeah, pop sure. and shit, that is mm-hmm. the splatter paint, the,
yeah.
that is the abstract of music. And she lives there, which means comparing her musically is bad to do, is not yeah. fun to do. Listening to the albums all the way through, here's what I'll say. I found at times, for somebody who seems to be this comfortable living in the abstract, her lyrics were almost too on the nose for me.
Mm.
Like, for somebody who legitimately was like sonically in the abstract, like she says she's trying to pull from anywhere from Kate Bush to Brian Eno and like everything in between, okay. which I get.
Sure.
But like, a lot of her stuff is just like very, very literal in lyric. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Also, one thing I also noticed is she loves to make like the first sentence the title. Like, it's right away.
Yeah.
And most of her songs, it's just like, human behavior is the first thing, basically. And she's like, that's what it's called. I called yeah. it that. That's the title.
Honestly, the amount of stress that goes into naming songs, like, it's not a terrible idea.
Yeah. There was a song on this album, which I'm trying to remember exactly which one. I think it's either There's More to Life Than This or Big Time Sensuality. It might be Big Time Sensuality.
Sure.
Where there, it was like very like electro poppy, like club mm-hmm. dance, like EDM music yeah. with her like singing over it. But like, you know, like she's like, it was very, very like mastered in the sound. Like, it was very much like a cohesive sound. Mm-hmm. Then the music fades and there's literally like like Foley sounds of like somebody walking, like then closing a door.
Yep.
And then somebody, and then Bjork talking into a microphone, like singing the same thing almost a cappella with the music quietly in the background. And I'm like, okay, what is happening? What are we doing, Bjork? Are you in the club performing live? And then this is you singing it again backstage? Are you in the club as like a dancer and the song is playing and then you like go to the bathroom and are singing it to yourself while it's on? What are we doing?
I don't know. I don't know.
So, needless to say, debut left me with more questions than answers. And now we'll go to Fosura. Here's what I'll say. Bjork knows who Bjork is.
Mm-hmm.
And Bjork's weird as shit. Again, it's not bad. Like, I don't know. But it's not good. No. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is. Exactly. Exactly.
It's literally just, like, so weird.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the song Ancestress, I believe, features Bjork's son.
Oh, okay.
Which is cool. But, like, the songs are just so weird, man. They're so weird. And it's like, I know Bjork speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously she's Icelandic, so it's not her right. first language. But she speaks English, and she speaks, I believe, pretty conversational English. So I don't mean this. I'm not like making fun of her like heritage or anything,
mm-hmm.
but it really feels like sometimes like her writing style is like Google translating things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't fit the vibe that you get. Like, it's like, it doesn't free flow at all.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's almost like an Uncanny Valley lyrics.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's not quite human.
Yeah, so it's just, it's so hard to describe comparing it to anything else. I will say that she is a critical darling.
Yeah.
People love Bjork. And here's the thing. I don't dislike Bjork at all. I know I read what this album was about, and like, that touched me. It was recorded during COVID-19. It centers around isolation, loss, grief over the death of her mother, who we talked about earlier as clearly being supportive of her. She did the photo and cover for her very first album as a kid. Like, all that stuff resonates with me. Like, I want to like you, Bjork. I just can't understand what you're saying. And I don't mean that because you're from Iceland. I mean, your lyrics make no sense to me. And I don't know. Maybe that says more about me. Who knows?
I don't know.
I'm not going to knock Bjork for that, but I certainly am going to knock Bjork for that.
Yeah. I mean, I have pretty much the same notes that you have. I mean, I would like to, my positive is that you have to give her credit for very unique and original sounding arrangements and harmonies that she chooses to use. She definitely is doing something that no one else is doing.
Sure.
And it's just as fascinating as it is repulsive to listen to. So you're just kind of like stuck in limbo because it's like, oh, this is so interesting. It's not pleasant though, but it's interesting, but it's not nice to hear. Yeah. I don't know.
Here, can I read you something?
Of course you can.
Yeah. So like, being a critic obviously is sometimes a challenging job, right?
Of course.
Like, it's like you're giving your opinion on things, but you have to constantly keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. You can't just write the same thing over and over again. But I feel like sometimes people jump the shark a little bit. So sure. This is Will Hermes at Rolling Stone.
Okay.
He says, Falsora zooms in, Google Maps style, looking at people on the ground and in the room, measuring the distances between them. The sonic landscape is still huge, awesome, as alien as it is familiar, full of otherworldly arrangement, tectonic beats, and craggy melodies that conjure the terrain of her native Iceland. Bullshit, dude.
That dude, you know what? I don't know why he's not a politician.
Right? Like, what are you saying? What, like, you just said, I just read you a lot of things that meant nothing.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can speak for paragraphs at a time with very flowery language that doesn't actually mean anything or address whatever you're trying to address, like, you'd nail it as a politician. Like, that's where he should be at.
I do want to say the last sentence of his review. I'm not going to read the whole thing. He says, it's Bjork at her absolute Bjorkiest. Like, what well, are you saying?
That makes sense to me, actually. As right. I get it. Albums.
I get it, but it's definitely just like, it's nonsense speak. You're making less sense than Bjork did on this album.
I know. But, you know, I would love to find out more about her.
Sure. And I can tell you a bit about Bjork. The interesting thing about Bjork was obviously she has lived a life. So she is our first artist from Iceland. That could be the unique thing about her.
Sure.
She is by far the most popular Icelandic artist.
Well, yeah.
That's of sure. all time. I couldn't even name another one off the top of my head, but I could name Bjork. And I think most people are in the same way.
You're right.
I'll say that before she had her second solo career, we'll call it, like from debut onward, the one that is much more popular than her original album, Bjork, she was in a number of bands, mostly punk and post-punk, which kind of makes sense, which she was in most popularly a band called the Sugar Cubes. But she had previously been in other ones named Spit and Snot was one. There was one called Exodus. And my favorite one, Tappy Takaris, which translates to Cork the Bitch's Arsh.
Oh, very good then.
And there was also one called Kukul.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so just a couple of unique things about Bjork, mainly the Iceland. I see you sent me Icelandic musicians.
Yeah, it's even on Wikipedia, it's a fairly short list. And I'm going to be honest with you right now. I don't recognize any of the names.
No, it's Bjork.
Like on the
Bjork
comprehensive list of every person in Iceland who's ever released a song, presumably, that Wikipedia has.
Yeah.
There are no other names that I recognize.
I like name Sin Fang. I really like the name Sin Fang.
That's a good one.
Who is a member of the band Sea Bear.
Oh, okay.
So
I love bear regardless of their territory. You know?
Wait, I'm confused. I'm confused. I hovered over this one who's just called Clive, but it's definitely like not their name because it just says Ulfur Hansen is an Icelandic electronic musician. So who's Clive?
Better known by his stage name, Clive.
Does it say that?
I can only assume.
Right. It doesn't say that in the beginning, though. It doesn't say that anywhere.
That's very strange.
Like, it says Clive at the top of this wiki page, and then it makes no mention to the fact that it says Clive. Hey,
Iceland
whatever.
Is weird, man.
Hey, you know what? Happy for them.
Yeah.
Happy for them. Happy place. For Bjork. We'll get into the highlight. the highlight for Bjork is probably just going to be debut.
Sure.
And if it's not debut, it's probably her Order of the Falcon that she received from Iceland, which is the highest citizen's honor in Iceland, similar to like being knighted in the UK, such things such as that. So she, I mean, well deserved for her contributions to music and things. Like, she is a national treasure of Iceland. So pretty good highlight, I would say. Her low light is really sad. Though, so her low light in 1996, she had a fan encounter with a man named Ricardo Lopez, who mailed Bjork a letter bomb full of sulfuric acid, like a crazed fan, like an obsessed American fan. He wanted to punish Bjork for being in a relationship with Goldie. He then returned home and filmed a suicide in a video diary, which later became public and caused a media sensation. That halted one of the results, or it temporarily halted the sessions that made her album homogenic. So super low time for her. She's come out in very few public comments about this event, saying she was very distressed by the incident, saying she makes music, but in other terms, you know, people shouldn't take me too literally and get involved in my personal life. She sent a card and flowers to Lopez's family. She left for Spain and recorded the remainder of that album. She also hired security for her and her son.
Sure.
So super, super spooky stuff. I mean, that's the price that nobody should have to pay for fame is like, but it is unfortunately one of the prices that people sometimes have to pay for fame is crazy shit like that, man. So,
yeah,
we'll go into her positive stuff, her nicest moments. Bjork heavily involved in charity, heavily, heavily involved. Some stuff that she's done after the 2004 tsunami. Bjork worked on a new project titled Army of Me Remixes and Covers that raised money for the relief fund. This project recruited fans and musicians from around the world to cover or remix the 1995 track Army of Me. She received 600 responses to that, and they picked the best 20 versions to appear on the album. So that's pretty cool. The album raised about 250 lira. What is that? Pounds to help UNICEF's work. I'm reading this off of a photo I captured on my phone.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I was like, what does that say?
Fair enough.
So then that's something like that. Bjork also has taken part in things like the Live Aid concerts, helping Japan and things such as that. So she's been heavily involved in charity throughout her career. Some low lights for Bjork, as in her meanest moment that I can see, which call it mean, call it... I'm on the fence about this, but she's had multiple confrontations with paparazzi. So in 1996, Bjork arrived at Bangkok International Airport with her 9-year-old son, who, as we met, I believe I mentioned, did I mention off air? His name is Sindri. After a long haul flight, reporters were present despite Bjork's early request that the press leave her and her son alone. Bjork attempted to walk away and a television reporter approached Sindri and said, "Welcome to Bangkok." Bjork then lunged at the television reporter, whose name was Julie Kaufman, knocking her to the ground and banging her head against the concrete floor until security intervened. Bjork later apologized to Kaufman, who declined to press charges. So that was one. And then again in 2008, she was at the Auckland International Airport and she tore the photographer a paparazzi shirt and she fell to the ground in the scuffle. Now, yeah, that's mean she's attacking paparazzi. However, I fully, like, yeah, sure, being paparazzi is a job, I guess, but, like, it's predatory as all hell.
It's a terrible job.
Completely invading the privacy of people, and sometimes you catch people on a bad day after a long-haul flight to Thailand, and you're approaching her child, and, you know, hey.
Yeah.
Mean moments, I guess, but it was definitely events that needed to be talked about. Mm-hmm. So going into her Six Degrees, I had a couple could choose from. Off of the first album, Bjork, obviously she recorded a Beatles song, which we could have talked about. Mm-hmm. She also recorded a song written by Edgar Winter. We could have talked about that. However, on debut, she worked with a producer and a composer whose name is David Arnold. Now, David Arnold is more notable for working in film and television as a composer and producer. One such television show that he worked on was a show from 2010 to 2017 called Sherlock. Sherlock, of course, stars Benedict Cumberbatch, who is more notable for being in the MCU as Doctor Strange, where in Avengers Endgame, he worked with a man with a creature called Groot, played by Vin Diesel, who we covered on this podcast.
Was that six? Did you actually count them out? Like, how many steps did you make it exactly that long and convoluted?
You know what happened? I'll tell you. Yeah, I had to bring it to Vin Diesel because I saw David Arnold and went, oh, interesting, interesting. Film, like, we can probably get to one of our actors. And then I saw that he did the music for the film Too Fast, Too Furious.
Okay.
Which is one of the only ones not starring Vin Diesel.
Ah, I see.
And I went, you son of a bitch, I got to get to Vin Diesel now. And then I scrolled down a little bit and saw Sherlock and went, oh, I can get there through Benedict Cumberbatch. Easy peasy. And so I did.
Okay. And so you did. And I commend you for it.
Thank you. Thank you.
But now.
That's all I got of Bjork.
It's time to move to Amy Winehouse.
Amy Jade Winehouse was an English singer and songwriter who was active from 2002 until her passing in 2011. And we covered both albums from Amy. We started with Frank, which came out in 2003. And then we followed that up with Back to Black from 2006.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, we didn't listen to it, so we're not going to talk about it. But and I know you're about to go. Mm-hmm. I am a little upset after just now reading about Lioness,
sure,
because Lioness was a posthumous album that came out in 2011, which was previously unreleased music, which means we could have probably done it.
Yeah. All right. Well,
but we did not
listen to it.
Yeah.
No spoilers. All right. So let me talk about Frank, which you may be surprised to know is an album I've never listened to before.
Really?
Really. But my expectations coming in were very high because we're going to talk about an album in a little bit. That's one of my favorites. And it had very high reviews, like very strong reviews, with one exception. Some guy named Robert Christgau panned it and thought it was awful.
Mr. Costco.
Yeah, but everybody else loves it. and so did I. I mean, I thought this was a really good record. It was a cool combination of styles. Like, anyone who knows any Amy Winehouse knows it's kind of like soul jazz R&B.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of hard to call one thing. And they fit her voice perfectly, all using all those styles. Like, it's right on the money. And I think it's kind of really interesting. And I guess it could be the knock on this album if you were someone who didn't like it. But what I really like about it is it feels like a live experience, this record. Like, you get some maybe half-baked song ideas that are, like, connected to the ends of other songs, and then they get the little slash in the title. But it also feels like they nailed a song, and now they're, like, throwing out an idea for, like, a really cool thing that they also want to work on. And maybe it was only a minute long, but, like, it was still enjoyable. So it almost feels like you're in the studio and you're having fun and you're coming up with these ideas with Amy and the band. And you're like, really not just hearing some excellent songs and great vocal work, but you're experiencing what it's like to make an album like that. And so I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience.
Yeah. So I'd heard Frank before. I've listened to I've listened to every released album. I've never listened to Lioness, which is why I was upset.
Yeah.
Because I was like, until this moment, we could have gotten new Amy Winehouse that I hadn't heard before.
Checking that out.
But I've listened to this album before. I get what you're saying with it. I really like this album because for me, you can hear the before in Amy Winehouse. That's the big thing that I hear here. It's like she's 18, 19.
Yeah.
When this album's being recorded, she's young, and it's before the problems. Mm-hmm. And you can totally hear it. So it's such a bittersweet album for me because you're just hearing so much talent in her voice. Like I said right before we went on the air, I said like Amy Winehouse walked so like Adele could run. Mm-hmm. Very similar vocal style where she just like opens her mouth and like a torrent of talent just pours out of her voice. What I really enjoyed about this album is she is clearly writing these. Mm-hmm. She's clearly writing the lyrics on these. They're speaking from personal experience to her, even though they have like almost like a jazz standard feel in them. Like it's so old soul sounding. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly a lot of talent. She's young here, as I mentioned, and you can hear a little bit of youth in her voice. Like it's not fully reined in yet.
Yeah.
She has a little bit of control issue at times where like she'll go on a run or like go up and like it's just a little bit like, well, oh, catch it. And then she does. But it's such a minuscule critique. Like it barely matters to this album. But it's got all of her personality.
Yeah.
Like the personality of Amy Winehouse is just like, I don't care what you think. Even though I'm like growing in fame and popularity, I'm this like down to earth, like Cockney girl.
Sure.
And that's exactly what this exudes with songs like Fuck Me Pumps. You Sent Me Flying Cherry is a great song. Really like a really good album that has a bit of a melancholy overtone based on what happens.
Yeah.
And I'll take us into Back to Black.
Oh, by the way, I was just looking at the track listing for Lioness while you were saying those last few things. She has a version of A Song for You by Leon Russell on there. And also The Girl from Ipanema, which I am like super curious to hear.
Oh my gosh.
Because the Getz Gilberto version with Astrud Gilberto on vocals is unbeatable for me. Like Astrud Gilberto is another one of my all-time favorite singers.
Well,
Amy Winehouse could definitely kill it still.
The only reason I'm upset is because I have to wait till Friday to listen to this album now. Because I have to listen to six albums for us to record our next episode of the podcast. And then I will listen to Amy Winehouse as my reward.
That's right.
But taking us into Back to Black, this is the best album of the week. By far, this album is a word that I don't use too often. Incredible. Mm-hmm. She sounds incredible on this album. Her vocals all the way through. Her like she has this like deep contralto sound in her voice, but like the lower it gets, the more emotive it gets, and it's just such a rare sound. And it creates this instant like sex appeal in her voice. Where like you're just drawn in and attracted to I'm not even talking about her as a person, just like the sheer vocal and the way she sings with like this like power, but also like sometimes it gets a little breathy and like draws you in a little bit. There's such emotion in her voice. Mm-hmm. It's like truly incredible. It starts off with Rehab, which I did parody in the beginning of the show. Great song. Again, you're getting Amy Winehouse vocals telling Amy Winehouse's story, which it is. I mean, that is her story. At this point, that literally happened to her. She's been struggling with drugs and alcohol since like for years before this. They kept trying to force her into rehab. Her dad was both for and against it, very supportive of her, but also like kind of seemingly a little blinded and like my little girl's fine kind of deal. And all the way through this album, you're just getting incredible vocals. Me and Mr. Jones is just so good to listen to. You get Back to Black, which is another huge one. Really, like every song, I can't even think of a weak spot on this album. It is such a joy to listen to, and I cannot listen to this album without being absolutely enthralled from the first track and miserable by the end of it because it's the last one.
Sure.
And like this is how good she was And we could have gotten so much more. I mean, she was so young. Like, this album came out in 2006, man. She died in 2011 at 27 years old. We could have been getting albums like this for another 20 years after that.
Yep.
Easy. And we didn't. And it's so sad.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you covered a lot of ground there, so...
Sorry, I know yeah, your favorite good. Album. I can't.
Yeah, it's... oh, totally it is. I mean, like, the only thing I can think of, you know, and I did this for the first one too, just because I'm just trying to play both sides a little bit. Like, it suffers from maybe a little sameness in a couple of the songs where it's, you know, maybe difficult to hear in the first 5 or 10 seconds, whether it's this one or that one. But that being said, I mean, all 11 of these tracks stand as excellent songs on their own. The vocals are great. The arrangements are great. The melodies are fantastic. The performances by everyone are great. Tears Dry on Their Own, Love is a Losing Game, You Know I'm No Good. Like, every single song is an absolute winner. Like, there are no missteps in terms of the actual song. And I think, like, all of the singles, there were 5 of them, are fairly iconic. Like, each one has made its mark. And that's, I mean, it's 5 stars. It's like, it's, you know, it's an incredible album. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. Like, I love it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it just sucks that we didn't get more from her.
I know.
So sad. Why don't you give us some.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk
some facts.
Let's talk facts. So I'm going to start out with our 6 degrees of Totem Talks, of course. And so there is currently a biopic underway, which is going to be directed by a woman named Samantha Taylor Johnson, who made her directorial debut with a film called Nowhere Boy, which was a story about John Lennon's childhood. So the woman who made the movie about John Lennon's life as a kid is now making the biopic of Amy Winehouse.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Like, I thought we both went film.
Yeah. You know, I didn't want to go I didn't want to make it too easy.
Yeah.
So here's the unique thing. And you actually kind of talked about this earlier with Bjork in a different way, but paparazzi. So, and the way that she dealt with it, that I thought was kind of interesting. So she actually was able to get an injunction against one of the paparazzi agencies called Big Pictures under the Protection from Harassment Act in the UK. The paparazzi was completely banned from following her in any way legally. They were banned from being within 100 meters of her house or photographing her in her home or in the homes of any friends or relatives. So, I mean, I don't know how frequently something like that happens. You know what I mean? Like, you end up with Bjork, who's not able to make that kind of thing happen legally. And she ends up in some pretty bad situations with the paparazzi. So I just thought the fact that she was able to, like, legally keep them away using harassment law and, like, couldn't even go near her house.
Good for her.
Honestly. Yeah, oh, totally. And the highlight of her career, I mean, we could say it's Back to Black, and in a way it is. It's the 50th Grammy Awards, where she won 5 Grammys that night for the album Back to Black and the various tracks on it. That tied the record for the most for any woman to win at a Grammy, and she was the first British woman to win that many awards. She won Best New Artist, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best Pop Vocal Album. So she won, like, she didn't just win 5, but she won a lot of the most coveted ones. So that's
I mean, honestly, that's a huge highlight.
Yeah, it's hard not to be, right? Yeah. And the low light is something that was with her for a while throughout her life, and it was the relationship she had with Blake Fielder Sybil. Their relationship caused, I mean, there was a lot of violent incidents between them. It caused self-harm. It resulted in Amy being introduced to both crack and heroin, because Blake's Fielder Sybil literally said in an interview, I'm the one who got her on to crack. I'm the one who first introduced her to heroin. And it's like, hey, fuck you, Blake Fielder Sybil. Like, fuck you. You're a terrible person.
Yeah.
I mean, she had a lot of issues, I think, and her relationships were definitely not helping that. But I guess I can go on to the nicest thing about her, which has to do, again, with charity. And she was actually kind of not publicly known to be very charitable, but she was. Like, it was just kind of, maybe she I don't know if it was an image thing or she had like a certain, like, you know, I don't give a fuck about anything type of image that she had to maintain or something, but she was like very quietly involved in a lot of charity. In 2008, she appeared in Easy Living magazine to raise awareness for breast cancer. She was on a CD with the Rolling Stones and the Killers to raise awareness for climate change. She downloaded like 20,000 pounds worth of clothes to, like a charity shop in London. She had a fan in the Caribbean named Julian Jean de Baptiste, who, like, she paid for his surgery, that, like, he would have died if he wasn't able to get the surgery done. And he was quite a sin, like, you know, I had surgery on the 1st of July 2009. It cost a fortune, and Amy paid for the whole thing. I tried to thank her. She just hugged me and told me not to say anything. Her generosity gave my life back. So,
can you imagine? I mean, seriously. Obviously, that is a truly amazing thing that she did. And I'm not knocking that at all, right? At all. Could you imagine if you needed surgery and, like, David Gilmour just paid for that?
No.
Like, one of, like, you're a huge fan of somebody. Mm-hmm. Or, if I needed surgery and, like, Billy Joel just was like, yo, I got you, dude. Yeah. Like, one like, somebody who you, like, revere as an artist. I mean, that brings a whole other level to it. Like, yeah. not only are you a fan of her work, but like, she literally saved your life. That's incredible, dude. That's incredible.
Yeah, definitely. And also, in after her passing, there was the Amy Winehouse Foundation, which was set up by her family to help vulnerable or disadvantaged young people. And they work with a lot of other charities that do frontline support for disadvantaged kids. Definitely good stuff on that end too. And I think the meme kind of mixes in with all the violence in her relationship that surrounded the drug abuse and whatnot. So,
sure.
So that's what I got.
Sounds about right. But
so here we go. Let's grade them. And look, I think they've both definitively impacted culture.
You could say that again.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both household names
for sure, 100%.
For different reasons, but. I mean, I would argue that most people in the United States know the name Bjork, but they know she's like some weird lady in Iceland, right? And that's like pretty much where it stops.
I am almost certain that a lot of people don't know of the actual music of Bjork.
Nope, I didn't. So, I mean, I don't know what that means as a score. Like, if like everybody kind of has an idea who you are, but doesn't necessarily know why.
Yeah, I mean, she's the largest artist in Iceland. She's
in total mass.
In total mass, yeah, she's okay. 7 feet tall. It's above average. I mean, it's above. It's definitely an above average score.
I agree.
I'm trying to find a good number for it. For like,
I know
I haven't heard any of your music, but you're
yeah,
you know, and I mean, she's
been permeated regardless.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she's nominated for an Academy Award. She's won Brit Awards. Multiple Grammy Awards. We're talking about from Bjork. Never a win, but multiple nominations from Bjork.
Right.
I think 16, something like that.
That's significant.
I think we'll probably see her up at like over 5.5, near 6.
Sure, you got it. You want like
Let's give her a 5.9.
You got it. And look, I think the issue that we have with Amy Winehouse is just such a short career. Because she was ultra popular in that career. She is still popular now.
Right. And like, here's the thing
is that she didn't have time to like fully
she's gonna suffer.
Catalog.
She's gonna suffer in other categories for the lack of catalog.
For sure.
Her cultural impact cannot be discounted for that.
Oh no, and I'm just saying, like, as opposed to like what it might be if she was still active now. Like we might be we might be talking about like a 7-something now, but had she put out 5 more albums between Back to Black and now, we might be talking about like in the 8s or a 9 or like one of the highest selling artists of all time.
Sure. I mean, there's definitely some stuff to talk about. One thing that's going to get her a little bit here, but more an X factor, is she died when she was 27.
Yep.
That is big. She is, I believe, the most recent member of the 27 Club, if I'm not mistaken.
Could be.
At least the like when you think of the 27 Club.
Yeah.
I remember when she died and was immediately like put in that category.
Sure.
That's a crazy category to be in. Mm-hmm. And I remember I said to you when we were talking on the phone earlier this week, listening to her albums again, especially right after listening to Copain to Cobain and Hendrix and stuff, there is an argument to be made that, like, she ranks near the top, if not the top, of, like, artists from the 27 Club I most wish weren't on it. I said to you, I was like, it's probably, like, for sheer, like, contribution of new ideas, it's probably still Hendrix. But she's up there, man. And, like, it's just this, like, wistful regret whenever I get to hear her sing.
Especially
for how much she did contribute to the music and stuff.
Yeah.
I think, but also you're talking, like, again, because of her, like, that style of music that, like, Adele has run away with, and other artists similar in that vein of, like, that, like, blue-eyed British soul sound has exploded post Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the sevens is a really comfortable spot.
Sure, I have.
And I think you're probably, you could even go to a 7.5.
And I'll put it in for you. And we'll move on to breadth of work. And Bjork, I believe, has 11 studio albums.
Yeah, I want to get the exact number, because the first time I looked at her stuff, it was like mixed with all of her other albums.
Okay.
So I'm going to get the exact number for you as it's loading in. Yeah, 11 studio albums.
Okay. So it's a 5.8. And look,
right,
she's done well enough that more points need to be added onto that for sales.
Yes, you definitely are not wrong about that. Multiple platinum albums, in many different countries, selling millions and millions of records worldwide. We're probably looking at putting her like a 6.1 to start.
Yep, I was thinking that as well. Now, what would you like to do with her score, Pat?
Listen, this score here, the adding and subtracting thing, the way that I typically look at it is my willingness to re-listen to the music.
Sure.
And I have no willingness to re-listen to Bjork's music.
Understandable.
I don't hate it, so I'm not going to give her like a minus 0.5 like I could.
Yeah.
Or a 0.4. I am going to minus a 0.3 here.
Okay.
Like, it's too wacky for me personally to enjoy listening to it. It's like an art, you know what I mean? Like, you don't necessarily go to the art gallery every day, right?
Yeah.
You go, you experience it once, and that's it. And you like or dislike and move on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't thinking about taking away as much as you. I definitely like, I respect Bjork. I respect the hell out of Bjork as an artist who is, like, uncompromising with a vision.
Sure.
But there was never a time when I was not unhappy with what I was hearing.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
And it's like, so I don't, I might just take away 0.1.
Okay. So,
because it has to break on one side. It definitely breaks more on unpleasant than fascinating, but it truly is fascinating. Like, I don't want to. So I'm going to take her to a 5.7, and we'll talk Amy Winehouse. So she starts with 1.6 for her two records. And look, we're going up from here, because, like, really impressive sales.
I mean, you're talking impressive sales, right? I mean, yes. Yeah. For two albums, I mean, let's get the exact numbers.
Yeah, her career total album sales are estimated around 20.5 million, give or take.
Yeah, 20.5 million between two albums, which means, you know,
I think we have to give her at least what we gave Bjork, because if we're talking about total album sales for a career, it's probably similar.
Yeah, that's fine. So we'll give her the
0.3.
We'll give her the 0.3. Although, again, split between two albums is basically saying, like, two diamond level albums in sales.
Oh, yeah.
But
And then we have to give or take away points. And so this is where I'm like, I'm a little unsure on my score, because there's two albums, you know, like, if there were four or five albums, my score might be a 0.5, but there aren't, and I don't think it can be. I don't think it can be a 0.5, so I will do what I do best, and I will give her, I'll really put the ball in your court. I'm going to give her a 0.35.
A 0.35?
Yeah.
Sure. And
which will round, depending on what you do.
Here's what I'll tell you. I just gave you my quantification and my qualification for how I score this. Mm-hmm. I base this number on songs and albums I'm more likely to re-listen to. And I want and actively look to re-listen to 100% of Amy Winehouse's music.
Absolutely.
On a regular basis, including songs that we didn't even get to listen to.
Yeah.
Like Valerie, which we did not even get to discuss.
Right.
Her cover of the Zootens' Valerie. Which I was surprised that wasn't part of your 60s.
Yeah, it felt obvious.
Yeah, I guess. She's a 0.5 for me.
You got it. She's I totally
the,
get it.
Like, she's so, the epitome of a 0.5. Not so only do I want to listen.
That gets added to your score.
And good. Because, I mean, she's just, I would re-listen to every single song she put out.
Fully agree. Instrumental talent. So now we've had this conversation many times before on the podcast, and it's like potential talent and what is placed on the record. And one of those things is significantly higher for Bjork than the other.
What?
Like her potential for talent versus like what we heard happening on the record are different things.
Yeah. Here's the problem I have with Bjork and Bjork's music. It's very electronic.
Sure.
I mean, the first album is mostly analog music. It came out in the 70s, but she's also 11. She's not contributing other than her child like vocal to that. So I think we're doing everyone a favor by not counting that one really in our score, which means we're then including a mix of EDM, electropop, with very little analog instrument throughout. Mm-hmm. And a voice that has moments, but mostly doesn't because she doesn't ever use it.
Yep.
And I think all that kind of goes to a below average score. I'm sorry, Bjork. Like, not terribly below. I'm not talking the threes, but not showcasing instruments and barely showcasing the power in your voice. I could probably see maybe a 4.6.
And you got it. And now I think we're talking about a not very opposite thing.
Because yeah.
Amy Winehouse, I think she's one of the all-time great vocal talents, man. I really do.
Yes. And she also does play guitar on her albums.
Okay, there you go. I mean, the band on her records is excellent. Yeah. I love what they do. I mean, they like perfectly find their place right in around her.
You know what? I do want to be fair to Bjork. I did include this in her score, but I didn't actually voice it out loud.
She does play like flute.
She does play like a couple bass lines and some keyboards and a brass in a little small capacity on the album. So like she is playing multiple instruments. I did count that in the score, but I want to explain that she does play multiple instruments as well.
Got it.
Just not a lot on her
albums
because it's mostly electronic music.
Yeah. Okay. So look, I'm very high on Amy Winehouse. Like,
really,
as a vocal talent, I mean, she's up there near the top.
Yeah. You're not getting me to disagree with you in any way.
Like, I'm not like going to give her a 10 or anything. But I think we can probably discuss being in the eights.
I think you could easily discuss the eights. I think she has a combination of things that every vocalist dreams of. A voice that is instantly recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amy Winehouse starts singing and you know that's Amy Winehouse singing.
For sure.
Which is a gift that a lot of people don't get. I always think that's the one part of a voice you cannot really train.
Yeah, sure.
Like you can train the timbre of your voice. You can train your technique, you can train your pitch recognition and pitch selection in your voice. You can work on your harmonies and your runs and all of these techniques that make you a better singer, your control, your breath support. If your voice just naturally doesn't sound good or doesn't sound unique, it's a lot harder for you to make it in the industry.
Yep.
And she has got that absolutely hands down.
Totally.
Coupled with that, you know, all of those other things that you can train, she's got them. She's got impeccable control of her vocals, especially in the second album. She's got a wide range in her voice where she has those really low contralto notes mixed with like almost a mezzo sound when she gets up there. It's like the textbook of like the textbook voice you want, especially in the genre that she's choosing to sing. Because you want somebody who can sing any song you put in front of them.
Do.
So I mean, the eights is good. I don't know where in the eights you want to go, but I'm with you wherever you land.
I'm gonna put an 8.7 and I'm gonna move on to songwriting.
I love it.
And like I mean, nobody on this planet writes a song like Bjork. Nobody comes up with the ideas that Bjork has. No one uses the harmonies that Bjork uses. It's not good to listen to, though. It's just not
right. Like what? Like what? Like it's tough to quantify a score.
And here. I'm not against avant-garde music. Like I'm a big Zappa fan. Like I can be on board with it, but not like this. I don't know. I'm not low though. Like, I'm just not low because she's got such a unique and different approach to songwriting that no one else has ever had. Like, but I'm not high because it's so bad to listen to. I mean, I'm close to the middle.
Yeah, I think we give her like a 5.2 and move on.
Okay.
I think you know, sonic enjoyment, you could be down in the twos. Mm-hmm. Sheer uniqueness, you could be up in the sevens.
Yeah.
And I think that just boils right down to,
yeah,
let's just be as kind as we can and move on.
Mm-hmm. And look, Amy Winehouse was a really good songwriter in her first two records as well. She also had a definitive sound, one that was actually really good to listen to, one that definitely blended influences and genre. I think if we were evaluating her on six records, we would probably be in the mid to higher six range because of how good I thought the arrangements and melodies were. And so I think that put us around like a 2.2 to 2.3-ish.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I choose to think, because I don't know how you felt, but I think if the growth between Frank and Back to Black was continued, that level of growth, we might even be talking her up in like the eights.
That's certainly possible.
Like, just the growth had continued. If obviously your score was if she stayed the same, which I agree with you on that as well. But I think the level of maturity that you get in just the few years between those two,
I don't deny it.
If that had continued. It's like a mid twos range, you think?
I mean, if I was thinking, I would have given her like a 6.667. So that's a 2.2 for a third of the albums.
Let's give her a 2.5 though. Let's account for the fact that she'll have some, she would have matured a little bit at least.
All right. I won't fight you too hard.
Yeah.
Poetic Talent, I think Bjork is 10.5, and I'm giving her 5 X Factor points. Any rebuttal?
Yeah, a little rebuttal.
All right, go ahead.
I rebut it just a bit. So
all right, like a 2?
I'm not quite a 2. Okay. But here's my problem with Bjork, as I mentioned. Obviously, her first album, we're going to just not count that.
Yeah.
No, she still has 10 albums, so we're not going to lower points. My issue with her lyric writing is that it feels almost simple in comparison to the music around it.
Yep.
Which is just like, it's a weird juxtaposition that I don't always get. It's like there's this huge thing happening and you're just like, you know, sometimes people are dumb. And I'm like, but what do you, clearly you mean more than that. Everything's happening behind you. Yeah. Clearly there's something else here.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so it's like, I feel like it's sometimes almost too simple, and it does fall into that uncanny valley range at times, which is a little unfortunate. I think I'm probably in, like, again, the low fours.
Okay.
It's just not fun.
Sure. I mean, like a 4.1.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine by me too. And look, I am in a similar place for Amy Winehouse that I was for her songwriting. Like, I think that the lyric writing is really solid. It's very personal, it's very raw, and like this could just be a me problem. There are some times when you get like fairly explicit lyrics that just feels so forced and so like, look at me, I'm cool because I'm saying things that you're not allowed to say in polite company. But I feel like it just so effortlessly falls out as her voice. It's hard for people to do that and for me to think anything other than like, oh, you're just trying to sound cool, but not with Amy Winehouse. Like, it is perfectly executed.
Yeah. So I want to get a quote. I had a quote pulled up and I just kept scrolling around things and lost it because of course that happened. It's the worst when that happens. But she was talking music and lyrics, and somebody, like one of her producers, I think it might have been Mark Ronson, who she worked with multiple times, basically was just like, I was talking lyrics with Amy, and she had written the lyrics for Back to Black, and they didn't rhyme. And it was saying, like, we only said goodbye, I died 1,000 times, like, and it didn't perfectly rhyme. And I said to her, that's really good. We have to make it rhyme. Can you fix that? And she looked at me like I was crazy and went, that's what came out. And like, he was like, that was her style. She was very sure of her lyrics and very sure of her writing. She never questioned it. Whatever she wrote, she wrote.
I've listened to that song about a million times.
Yeah.
And that is literally the first time I've ever even noticed that it doesn't rhyme.
Right. Of course.
It just flows so perfectly.
Of course, because she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a sucker for a perfect rhyme scheme. I'm a sucker for that perfect rhyme.
You are.
But it does not have to happen. But when you do it right, it sounds good. It's just very easy to mess up. Who did we have? It might have been Gavin DeGraw that week when we covered.
Remember that far back?
It might have been we covered Gavin DeGraw, and he had like a song about a soldier or something, and the rhyme scheme wasn't perfect, and it fit, and it didn't click in like the flow either. And I was like, it's the most uncomfortable thing I've listened. Like, it's so uncomfortable when it doesn't click. It either needs to flow through the rhyme or have a perfect rhyme, one or the other, or both, preferably both for me. But Amy Winehouse does it well enough that it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Look, I'll give her another 2.5.
And yeah, all of that to say is she's an exceptional lyricist.
So X Factor, we probably have some points to give out
to dole out both here artists. For both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we could start with Amy Winehouse here. I know we kept starting with Sure.
York. Yeah, I mean,
27 Club is obviously
it's
points.
It's the young death. It's, you know, it might be the fact that she has a biopic in production. There's also apparently a jukebox musical in production that will come out
Speaking
at some point.
Speaking my language, man.
Yeah.
Speaking my language. I can't wait for Adele to play Amy Winehouse on Broadway.
That would be interesting. I mean, you know who I could actually see maybe doing a really good job of that is someone we mentioned earlier off air, like Rachel Price. Amy Winehouse. That could be cool.
Depends on how long it takes for that to actually get in production.
That's true.
Both Rachel Price and Adele are in their 30s.
In their 30s, yeah.
It probably needs to happen before they're 40.
Yeah.
For them to play it.
But anyway, I mean, it could be also the 5 Grammy Awards at the 50th Grammy when she tied the record for any female artist, when she broke the record for any British female artist. Like, those are kind of the things here.
Sure, 100%. I think there's a lot of, like, a lot of small to medium and one large thing that all contribute to points here. Do you have a number in mind that you're thinking?
I don't know how many points.
I think we've established either 1.5 or 2 points for 27 Club.
Okay.
Do you have the scores up? What did we have for Hendrix and Cobain?
I mean, Hendrix was 5 and Nirvana was 4.5, but they were also innovators of genre and other things like that.
Right. So. Which I think 1.5 is the 27 Club part of it.
Though. Okay. Then that's fine. So what do you want to give her 2?
I think 2 works.
All right.
And Bjork, how many? Again, I mean, she has the Order of the Falcon in Iceland. She is obviously the largest performer from Iceland physically
in
as well.
Meters.
In cubic meters. She is 24 feet tall.
and 11.5 feet wide.
Exactly. Good old Bjork. But she has...
Only 2 inches in depth, though.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She turns and you practically can't see.
Yeah.
She has 16 Grammy nominations. She's been nominated consistently from 1994 all the way up to 2023 for Fasora. Sure. Yeah. She just keeps getting nominated for Best Alternative Music Album over and over again.
Yep.
This might be every album she's released since 2005. She got nominated for Best Alternative Music Album in 05, 08, 13, 16, 19, 23.
I'm sure.
So, I mean, she's clearly extremely gifted in that area. Yeah. She's getting nominations. She's selling albums. She is, you know, got the Order of the Falcon.
Sure. I mean, it's points. What would you like it to be?
I mean, you could probably look at it. You know, she also got nominated for an Oscar. You're probably looking at least another 1.5, I think, from Bjork.
Sure. And I'd be happy to give it to her.
Yeah, I think that's a good score.
Okay. And I have final scores. And oh boy, it was close.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. This is before you tell me anything, because for anybody who isn't aware, I don't see the scores as they're getting tabulated.
Yeah,
like Nick is the typer of the scores. I'm the puller up of the notes as we go.
Yes,
I felt coming into this that this was going to be an episode where Bjork was probably going to win based on longevity, and Amy Winehouse was clearly the favorite for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's and as close. We're scoring them, I'm like, Amy Winehouse is doing better than I thought.
Sure.
But that was my thought process of like,
okay,
if Bjork wins this, a deserved win for sure.
Yeah.
For her contributions. But like, give me another album to listen to. It's going to be Amy Winehouse.
Correct.
That's it.
So in first place this week with a score of. With a score of 27 even.
No.
Is Bjork.
What?
Yeah.
What a weird.
And
what a weird number for Bjork to get.
And with a 26 even was Amy Winehouse.
Oh, my gosh. So exactly 1 point
separated them. It's that goddamn 27 that always gets Amy.
Nick, that was mean. That was a bad one. Come on. Damn. 26 points for Amy Winehouse,
it's
though.
Pretty good, though, considering
that's incredible. Artists with
two albums do on our show.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, there we go. Yep. Congratulations to Bjork, like I said. Well deserved for your, you know, for your career and everything you've accomplished. Mm-hmm. Your music just is weird to me. Sorry.
It's very weird. But return next week or tomorrow if you're listening live for the triumphant return of Prague.
Yes, triumphant. Super triumphant, and what an episode it shall be.
Indeed.
But yeah, that's going to wrap us up. Thank you so much for tuning in. Everybody continue to listen. Go to your nearest music store and just stand in it while you listen to our podcast on your,
that would be perfect.
Your smartphone, because that's the way it is. If you go to a music store and ask about our podcast, they'll say, what?
Are you talking? That's correct.
You feeling okay? I don't know what you're not speaking. You're not making sense.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for tuning in. Please have a drink while you're here. And most importantly, have a great day.